Metta Sutta. Bob, take it away.
I've heard that for a little while, Bob. Take it away, Bob.
Hey, you've got a This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so... So it's good to see everybody again after 3 months holiday. And yeah, so it was a very peaceful rain, the community lived in harmony. We didn't have any fights, we didn't hold any grudges, so everything was all good, and that's a very nice thing. When it comes to practicing the Dhamma, because you know when we start to sit meditation, all of the distractions that we have readily at hand in our everyday life, it's not there anymore. Because I was at home last week, and just living with Mum and being around my brother. And just seeing just people in general, and you know, people have all these distractions that they can go to, whether it's the television, social media, the bottle of beer, horses, or whatever it is, you can actually see, even though these things may dampen the suffering that we, or the annoyances or the irritations that we may be like feeling or experiencing at the time, that they're still there. It doesn't really solve the problem. And you don't get to really see that until you learn how to sit down peacefully, quietly, you know, in meditation. So that's what the that's what we've been doing. That's what monks do. That's a part of our resume, is to sit down quietly with our eyes closed and to just look inward to see what's going on. And basically, the Buddha just taught us. There are things which trouble our minds, and there are things which free our minds. And the way we've learned how to free our minds in society is to just do stuff. But the Buddha was saying, now that's not the right way if you want to find like true freedom. And there's always the example that a lot of Buddhist monks and Buddhist teachers talk about, and it's one of these things that gave the Buddha the insight on how to overcome the suffering or the dukkha or whatever you call it in life. So what he did was he went by a stream. It was flowing in one direction, and that direction represented like the stream of the world, how people live outside, in what they do. And what he did was he put the ball into the stream, and logic says, right, the ball will just flow, the ball will just go in the direction by the way the stream is flowing. So the stream is flowing downwards. If you were to put the bowl in, the bowl would go downwards. But instead, in this story, when he put the bowl onto the stream, instead of following the flow of the stream, it went upwards. It went against the stream. So if we talk about Buddhism is a path of practice where one doesn't follow the stream of everyday convention, but instead we go against that stream of convention. Things we thought that would bring us happiness, we challenge it by looking for happiness elsewhere. So instead of looking outside, we look inside. Yeah? We look inside and we look at our own minds, and our minds in Buddhism is described as you could look at it as like this idea of a lotus growing in the water, right? And the lotus always starts from the mud. It starts from the mud and then starts to grow. It grows through the water, and then it breaks the water, and then is out in the open, and then it opens up into something beautiful, something beautiful. The beauty that we have in life. The beauty in the people that we meet, or the beauty of the music that we listen to, or the beauty of the environment that you're in. There is beauty in this world, and this simile is illustrating to us that beauty is found from like the dirtiest, the darkest places in this world. And he sort of compares that to our own minds. So when we first look at our own minds, it's not very clean, is it? There's a lot of mud there, you could say. There's the mind is restless, it's thinking too much, and sometimes as human beings we just give up too easily, And instead of just working through, you know, that pain or that difficulty, we give up and we miss out on the chance of just allowing that lotus, like from within, grow. And with anything in nature, it takes time for it to grow. And I'm sort of, I like nature, I like to garden and things like that. So I know how long it takes for something to grow. And, you know, if any of you have done anything like that, you know, mango doesn't grow in a tree unless you grow it for a few years. Or,
especially those Woolworths things.
Well, the basil and the thyme.
Yeah, you put them in and 3 months later, there's one little thing pops up.
And that's right. See? Yeah. So you need a lot of patience. That's the same with the mind.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no quick fix. There's no special teaching. And that's what the Dalai Lama would always say. Because a lot of famous monk, well respected for his wisdom, his compassion, and people would go up to him, and I guess he does sense that people want a quick fix. It says, you want a quick fix, go to McDonald's or something. But with anything, it does take time. But then if you're a gardener, if you're somebody who grows something, you also understand that you need the right conditions as well.
Yeah.
You need to feed the plant. You need to give it enough sun. You need to give it enough water. And then if you give the plant or the love, the kindness and whatever it needs, it flourishes. It grows. And you know, in the same way, just coming to this meditation practice. I know a lot of you have been here longer than I have. But it's always good to always come and listen to the teachings just to get a little bit of understanding. And just listening to it, I think, again and again and again, even though you know it, there's a part of you that still enjoys listening to the Dhamma, because it's like it's speaking the truth. Yeah. It's sort of like an old song that you love. Elvis. I don't know what you guys like. Rap, hip hop, heavy metal. Something that has been that you've listened to a long, long time ago, something like your favourite song. If you listen to that song again, you always get some sort of enjoyment, some sort of inspiration. And I think the same thing with the Dhamma, but it has a different meaning. And just listening to the good Dhamma time and time again, you feel inspired. There's a part of your mind that says, hey, that's the truth. And you know deep within that if you just practice, then the results will come. So what are those conditions that you put in? And just listening to Ajahn Brahma over the past 3 months, he always repeats the same message. And that's just like, you know, making peace, being kind, being gentle. Just being kind to yourself, pretty much. Being comfortable. Being comfortable when your eyes are closed. And just allowing things to happen. Yeah. Just sitting down and just being able to just go with the flow. And not wanting too much. You know, some of us would come here, we want peace. And we want enlightenment. And the only thing I ever got from wanting was a big headache. And I don't want any of that for you. So like I always tell people, when you meditate, when you sit down, just try to be comfortable in whatever position you're in. Try to be comfortable with whatever mind state you have. And that comfort just makes you feel good. And being able to feel good helps the meditation progress more smoothly, because you all know if you have a bad day and you try to meditate, how's your meditation? That's right. But if you had a good day, You've come to your favourite monastery, yeah? And when you sit and you meditate, you're feeling good, how does your meditation go? Yeah, that's it. So that's all we're doing, you know, we're playing with the mind. We're pointing it in the right direction. And I was thinking, like, a lot of teachers, when they teach meditation, they give you instructions. But instead of giving, like the way I've been taught, instead of a list of instructions, like the breath, and you have, like, you know, the lights in the mind and the deep meditations, it's not so much the instructions that you follow, but allowing the process to happen, allowing these things to come by themselves. So, like, allowing the present moment to appear within your own mind, allowing the breath to appear within your own mind, by just having, you know, the right attitude, being comfortable, just sitting down. And that's all you need. If your mind's thinking and you're comfortable, that's a good place to be. But if your mind's thinking and you're uncomfortable and you're wanting peace and you're complaining, you're not going forwards, you're going backwards. Yes. But if you're comfortable and your mind's thinking, it's all over the place. You're probably not moving forward, but at least you're staying still. And then once that discomfort disappears, then it moves forward. It gets more peaceful, it gets more quiet. Yeah, okay. I'll just give a little bit of guidance at the beginning. Just close your eyes. Just try to be as comfortable as possible. Put yourself in a position where you understand that there's nobody judging you. Put yourself in a position where you can understand that you don't have to perform any duties. Put yourself in a position where this is this is a time where you're giving yourself some space. You're giving yourself some alone time. There's a time where you know, you don't have a job, you don't have a son, you don't have a wife, you don't have a husband, you don't have an age. It's just being able to just live in the moment. Meditation is a time where you can be your true self. You know, when I sit in meditation, I'm no longer a monk. I'm just a human being sitting down with my eyes closed, I'm not an old person, I'm not a young person. Meditation is a time where nothing can happen. Is there any time in your life where nothing happens, if you think about it? Meditation is to worry about anything. Meditation gives you the opportunity to be in the moment, to allow a sense of peace and stillness to arise within your mind and your body. So all we're doing is just knowing whatever's happening now. The quality of the mind which knows. in life, we're happiest when we are not controlled by the people that we live with. And in the same way, our minds is that its happiness when we don't control it. So we just allow our minds to have a mind of its own. If it's tired, let it be tired. If it's angry, let it be angry. If it's restless, let it be restless. Because we understand that these things, they don't last. Eventually, these problems, they'll disappear. And once they disappear, the mind is okay again. Any questions? Question, comments? Complaints? How was it?
Too short. You said any complaints? Too short.
Not too long for some. Too short for some. So yeah, any questions about Buddhism, meditation?
Like Judy's just said, that's what I'm feeling now. It's obviously I'm not a beginner, but because the longer you do it, the more you, your mind settles, doesn't it? And you feel the benefit, you know?
Yeah. It naturally settles down, the more time you give it. The more it settles down, and you can start to see that it's more of a natural process, and that you can't really force it. One of my favorite teachers, his name is Ajahn Chah, and I when I was a younger monk, I used to read up a lot about him, but I haven't read anything about him for a long time. But I do remember a few stories, and one of the stories was that he was teaching in America, and he had a short teaching career overseas because he got sick quite young. Like, I think he was in his 50s, and he had a bad diet, taking too much sugar, and that caused a whole lot of problems for him. But anyways, he was in America, and one of his students came up to him and asked him, how do you meditate? And the student was expecting some sort of elaborate answer from the master Ajahn Chah, but Ajahn Chah would just say, "I just leave my mind where my mind is." And I thought, oh yeah, that's kind of interesting. He just leaves his mind wherever his mind is. And then he'll just sit, and you can imagine he's a meditation master, and he'll just sit in meditation, and he'll just go deeply, quite quickly. The reason why he was able to do that is because he put in a lot of practice over the years, until he got to the point where his mind, naturally goes into like a deeper state of stillness. So that's what happens after a while. Once you become like a skilled meditator, the mind becomes peaceful more quietly. Not quickly, but it naturally goes back there.
I was reading a little book out of your library from Ajahn Chah about meditation, and he's saying in it, you don't really, your mind sort of stays restful sort of thing until you go to the next meditation, and then it just slips straight in.
As your brother would always say, the mind will naturally progress onto the next stage, and how it gets there is through being able to just be still and be in the moment, and then the meditation process opens up naturally. That's one of the lovely and unique things about this type of meditation teaching. Is allowing the mind to just mature by itself. If you go and listen to different teachers from different schools, sometimes they have a more of a controlling approach to the meditation practice. Like, so just hold your mind still and keep it still, or watch the breath and just hold your mind onto the breath. And somebody like Ajahn Brahm, he's tried that practice many times, and it didn't work for him. I lived with Ajahn Brahm for a long time. I know his character. He's got quite a strong will. Whatever he wants, he'll get it. So whatever he wants, he gets it. and yeah, you know, when he was like, when he was growing up, he was a driven, he was a driven kid, young man. You know, Cambridge University, got really good grades. So he had that, you know, that that strong sense of will growing up, and he used that in his meditation practice as a young monk. And he said that didn't work. Yeah, that didn't work. So when you listen to his teachings today, he teaches people to just allow things to happen naturally. Just sit down, make peace, be kind, be gentle. He's big on having the right attitude in one's meditation, and then these things will, you know, slowly arise within one's mind. And that's the, that's the, that's the, because I kind of like that kind of teaching. Because when I first came into a monastery, I thought I had to sit for like 10 hours and watch the breath. And I tried watching the breath when I was a young monk, and I couldn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, you watch the breath in and out. I don't have a really, I'm not a willful person. I'm more of a kind of relaxed, you know, easygoing type of guy. And so, yeah, I tried that and it didn't work. And then I started to listen to Ajahn Brahm's talks. And he had all these different methods and means of how one can approach the meditation practice. And that's something that I sort of like to talk about as well, is like each and every one of us in this room, we're individuals, so we do have our own path of practice. The Buddha compared it to like different, like many different streams coming to one and becoming a river, then going into the ocean. And the ocean is symbols like nirvana. The stream is like the way to nirvana. No, the river is like the way to nirvana. And the little streams is like each individual that that comes upon this path. So we come from different directions, different walks of life, but we get to the same place and we get to the same goal. So everybody has their own unique way of doing it, and you can sort of compare it to like if you look at Ajahn Chah, and you know, these enlightened beings, you can say they did everything out of wisdom, because they attained, you know, the mind and all that kind of stuff, and they understand the human mind, and they teach through their character, or they teach through the way they attained to enlightenment. And when people talk about Ajahn Chah was a monk who taught in quite a fierce way. He was very forceful. He would put people through a lot of suffering to teach them a lesson. And that was the one of the things that was going around when I was a young monk, that in order for you to become enlightened, you have to understand what suffering is. And some of the teachers in Thailand would put their students through suffering. And one of the ways of doing that was, Ajahn Brahm always tells this story where after the meal, this is in the heat of Thailand, where it's really humid, people would go and sit in a tin shed, like color bond, right? Mm-hmm. No insulation, everything closed, right? And you had to wear your robe. So this gets hot, you know, because it sort of acts like a blanket, right? So you have to wear your robe. And then Ajahn Chah would make them wear the other robe as well, which is like this, but it has two layers. And then he said, if you want to bring a blanket, bring a blanket. So this is what he would put his students through. Because his students had a lot of faith in him, they didn't question him, and they did it. But this was his way of sort of like teaching them the Dhamma. And he was known for all these, you know, these tough practices. And I sort of like, okay, you know, I was thinking, if Ajahn Chah was like this, you know, how can Ajahn Brahm, why isn't Ajahn Brahm like this? I mean, you go live with Ajahn Brahm, he's completely different. He's soft, he's gentle, you know, he just lets you do whatever you want to do. But he does put his foot down if you step out of line. But he's gotten to a stage where he's more or less like a grandfather to his monks. And he understands that, he understands like the human mind. But he understood, right? He understands that as a teacher, he doesn't need to make you suffer to learn about the Dhamma, because you already have enough suffering within you to learn from.
So you're going to apply this back to the grandfather, aren't you, Bob?
He's probably listening.
He is. It's on record.
But then I think about it, you know, there's like a soft approach via Ajahn Brahm, and there's like this tough approach via Ajahn Chah. But both approaches, I think, came from wisdom. And I think if a person has true wisdom, well, whichever way they teach is a valid way.
I've got the same goal.
But then the funny thing is then you have, and they teach in their way, but it works. And, you know, Ajahn Brahm is a disciple of Ajahn Chah, and he's become a great monk. And but then you have like people who try to copy their teachers and they just stuff it up. But that's kind of interesting, you know, like the enlightened mind, the mind which is pure, is essentially the same. Like, you know, the Buddha would say that you know, even the Buddha had his own character, his own personality. But when you experience like the deeper meditations, then what you experience is what the Buddha experienced, is what Ajahn Brahm experienced, is what I experienced, what you experience, is all the same experience. But it's all the same experience. But each and every one of these great teachers taught from their own personalities and how they got there, and it all worked. Yeah, which is interesting. So that's the thing, you know, we like when people come and visit a monastery, I sort of tell them, you just go try different places and find what suits you and your character. Yeah. And then if you like it, and like the Buddha would say, if you find a place which helps you increase like wholesome states of mind, peace and meditation, that's the place where you should stay. But if you go to a place where the defilements of the mind, you become a more angrier person, more greedier person, then that's the place where you shouldn't stay. You should go somewhere else. So that's how he taught his monks as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not all about, you know, fireworks and comets flying through the air. It's like mundane. I like the mundane, down to earth, practical stuff. That's it. Yeah. Okay, we can finish.
It's a bit of a comparison of the priests. Some were fire and brimstone,
yeah,
and others were very calm.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the bliss through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing. May all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nibbana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Thank you.
Thank you.